Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, it's part 2 of GigPod Rewind, where we look back at season 2010-2011. And having looked at the downloads for part 1, it turns out that it's more than just myself and Reedzo that were actually interested in hearing about this particular season in Celtic history. So thanks for that, and here we go for the second part of this, as Reedzo would say, extravaganza. John, are you ready? Have you done any preparation? Have you taken any notes? And also, I do believe it's a landmark episode.
It certainly is. Hello, everybody. Hello, Stevie. It's episode 200. Yes, episode 200 of GigPod. And the celebration is you're getting another episode. We're doing episode 201 next. But no, yeah, this is episode 200. Thank you, everybody that's been with us every step of the way. I'm sure there's some truly demented people that have actually listened to all 200 episodes. I don't just mean you, but there will be people who have listened to them also. Happy anniversary to us, and happy Thanksgiving as well to all our American listeners, because I know we've got a lot over there in the good old USA.
And are you going to ding my question? Have you done any research or taken any notes? Because I know you're so unprofessional at these things. And GigPod is a very unprofessional podcast, John.
Well, I watched some clips, if that counts.
You were actually saying it's very hard to get highlights or any clips from them. Of course, season 12, 13 onwards, that's when everything changed, wasn't it?
This season and the next season, of course, when we won the league, that was before the highlights get uploaded on the SPFL YouTube channel. Now you can watch every highlights of every Celtic game the next day. But, I mean, back then, it was rare. I mean, on BBC website, there's loads of match reports for the games, and they've got highlights, but the clips aren't embedded, which is annoying. And I know that there's a YouTube channel called Oven Boy, who's got playlists for like nearly every Celtic season in the last like 15-20 years, and he's got quite a lot of games, but there's still some missing, including some that we'll talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, see, there's a goal in particular that I was looking for. A couple of days ago on the GigPod feed on Instagram, I posted up something where Chris Commons in the 12-13 season worked Hearts players into a shoot when he was keeping the ball up and he punted it back to them. I was actually looking for his goal against Hamilton and a win in early March 2011 as well, John. I actually managed to find it, but it was like a 3-second clip of a montage of all his goals at Celtic. And we are going to talk about Chris Commons, so why don't we kick it off here and really pay tribute to one of Celtic's best January signings. Scored in his debut, and when you look at his stats, John, 14 goals in 21 games in that season, second half of it. I mean, can you imagine if we'd signed him back at the start of the season? Chances are that he could have been the difference in those games in winter that we had between the 1 point and three.
Don't forget, Rangers wanted to buy him as well. It was a good old-fashioned Old Firm battle, because the Old Firm used to exist then, about who would sign him, and we won it. And I know a lot of people don't like him now, mostly because when he was on Sky, he talked rubbish. I think he's got a newspaper column somewhere where he's talked rubbish, and like he's one of the ex-Celtic players that like sticks the boot in for some reason. I don't know why, because he loved it at Celtic. Like, his first season especially, he was absolutely brilliant. Second season, a different story, we won't talk about that. Let's just say he fell out with somebody at Celtic. And I mean, he had it under good old Lenny, he had another couple of great seasons where he just scored constantly. He was a bit of a flat track bully really in the end, because of course like this season like he was brilliant against Rangers. The next season he only played once against Rangers, I think, and he scored. In fact, he scored against Rangers when we played that terrible Rangers team in the League Cup semi-final. But no, he was a great player, and I know we've talked about how Lewis Palmer reminds us about a Chris Commons. Like, I think Commons wasn't really a winger, he was more a So he was a kind of utility player because he played in midfield at times as well, and he played up front as well. I mean, he carried us in one of the boring seasons when Lenny was manager. I think he got like 30 goals. I don't know if he won player of the year. I can't really remember that, but he was a very, very good player for us. And really, it's a pity that nowadays people don't seem to like him, because for the amount of money we paid for him, he was an excellent signing, and it's just a pity that he sadly talked crap about us.
Now, I know that we left off part one when we won 2-0 at Ibrox, and then we would go to play Hamilton, who I think at that time were bottom of the league, you know, beating Rangers one step forward. But then we're taking two steps back when we drew against Hamilton, a team that we really should have been beating. It was more drop points. We've got no clips that we can rely on for this one. So myself and John are going to have to go back to our dangerous minds. What a feeling that was. Actually, it was crap. But anyway. Now, I'm pretty sure Hamilton did take the lead. I think we scored a penalty late on. And then do you remember, John, Lenny's reaction when I think a Mulgrew corner actually went out the park, Stokes headed it in, and it got ruled out. Now, nowadays, I remember seeing the replay of that, and I think the ball was out. So VAR would have said right away, right, that's not a goal. But do you remember the reaction for Lennon? Because I remember it was a biblical rage from him.
Unlikely any of that. No, I think he went ballistic. He went ballistic in first because he thought we'd scored. And then, of course, he went ballistic when it got disallowed. And I've actually got the stats here. There was three red cards. Two Hamilton red cards, Mensing and McAllister, and James Forrest get sent off as well. So Mensing scored for Hamilton as well, 28th minute. Stokes scored for us in the 92nd minute. And then it was Mulgrew, it says here, Stokes headed the ball into the net from Mulgrew's corner. But the assistant referee judged the corner had curved out before the Irishman connected. So there you go. Three red cards. That's... I don't even remember that at all. What a strange game.
I mean, I can remember the goals very clearly. The Stokes penalty, of course, and then the one that was disallowed. But I can't remember James Forrest getting red carded. So he said two red cards in his career then. I do remember one clearly against Red Bull Salzburg. Under Brendan, we lost 3-1 in 2018. Now, there was the third game against Rangers of the season was approaching. We were drawn against them in the cup. And the run we went on was quite impressive. We won five games in a row. We did not concede a goal in the league, John. We beat Hibs away 3-0. We won 1-0 against Aberdeen at home. Excellent performance against Hearts, who were like mounting a wee mini challenge of their own, you could say. And I think we pretty much stopped them in their tracks, because they'd beaten Rangers the Saturday before playing us. I do remember they brought a huge crowd through. We smashed them 4-0. And then an outstanding performance at Pittodrie before we played Rangers in the Cup. We beat Aberdeen 3-0. Stokes and Hooper enjoyed their best form together as strikers in that season, because obviously the 11-12 season, they were very impressive too. But I remember those run of games, Stokes and Hooper linked up so well. We scored a fantastic goal, again from memory, against Aberdeen. It was like a 1-2 and Hooper calmly sort of slotted it under the goalkeeper to make it 1-0. The game against Hibs, Hooper scored a great goal. Like, he took a touch, it was like Bergkamp-esque, and then put it past the goalkeeper as well. Quite a similar finish. But see the 3-0 win against Aberdeen, I think that was probably our most complete performance of the season before we battered Rangers later on in February. That was a great performance up at Pittodrie. Yes, I know we beat Aberdeen 9-0. I know that generally they weren't impressive, but I think Celtic went there and played some fantastic football. And I remember when we beat Aberdeen in 2017, remember Dembele scored two goals and Tierney scored a cracker? Very reminiscent of that performance in 2011. Just of the, on that wee run that we went on, some of the football we played, John, and I said it to you before, in that period of the season, was excellent.
It was excellent, and actually that Aberdeen game, the highlights are online, and not to take away from how good we were that night, Aberdeen actually got a guy sent off after a minute, would you believe, for a last man challenge on Scott Brown, and Stokes missed the penalty. But no, that it was a brilliant pass, a move between Hooper and Stokes. They did team up again for that goal against Hibs. Stokes actually scored twice in that game as well. Against Aberdeen, when we beat them 1-0, I think Hooper put Stokes through. And actually, we beat Aberdeen three times in just over a week. We beat them in the League Cup 4-1 when Commons scored his debut then. Beat them 1-0 at Celtic Park and beat them 3-0 at Aberdeen. The win against Hearts was a good one as well, because, as you say, Hearts were actually challenging us, and I think they were 5 points behind us with a game in hand. So if they'd have won that game, they'd have been well in it. But we hammered them 4-0. I remember James Forrest scored, I think, the first goal for like 30 yards. That was like his first real big goal as a Celtic player. And he's still scoring goals nowadays for his hood, I thought that. But no, I mean, that was a really good run. Of course, we're going to talk about the epic cup game against Rangers in the Old Firm World Series next. But, I mean, the games seem to become like thick and fast then. I mean, we're playing like most midweeks as well, but Celtic were playing that well, and that wasn't a chore, especially when you consider how this previous season under Mowbray would have been shit, basically. But now, like, I don't think MD expected us to mount a serious challenge, same as really an Angers first season. But we were playing excellent football, and the fans were really getting behind Lenny. And I think this was Lenny's best season as a manager, and even though we didn't win the league. But we played some really excellent football.
Now, before we talk about that game against Rangers, yes, in the Cup, remember, we actually went to Berwick Rangers as well, in the Cup, and won 2-0. But what Celtic player made his debut, and then would only make 6 more appearances before leaving through the back door?
The answer is, of course, Freddie Ljungberg, who, if our younger listeners, if there are any, don't remember, was a phenomenal player in Arsene Wenger's, like, sort of first few seasons at Arsenal when in London, that great, great city. Although, unbelievable enough, I have never been to Arsenal Stadium. Can you believe that? I mean, hopefully that'll end soon enough. So hopefully I'll get some freebies. No doubt Arsenal fans will listen to Gigpod. But no, he was a great player for Arsenal. He played in that Invincible team. He played in another team that won the double. Like back then, when winning the double was like a big deal in England, he didn't just win it practically every year like Man City do. He was a great player, but his career was sort of on the downside by the time he came to Celtic. He didn't start against Bradley. I don't even think he started a game for us. I mean, it was a sort of... I think the only reason we bought him was because we had that injury crisis we talked about in the last pod, where we went to Ibrox with so many players out injured. I think we're in a panic and thought, oh, we'll bring in Freddie Ljungberg. He's an experienced player. He's got loads and loads of caps for Sweden. He's been a great player in his day, but it didn't work out. And as you say, he left not long afterwards. In fact, this is unbelievable. This is a Charles Joe Hart situation. Do you know what Freddie Ljungberg's actual real name is? Carl Frederick Freddie Ljungberg. Imagine that. So, Carl Ljungberg wasn't for Celtic for long. He actually played only 7 games.
It must be a weird Swedish thing, because Henrik Larsson's real name, his shoot name, isn't actually Henrik.
No, it's Edward.
I wonder if people know that.
No, it's Edward Larsson. He's unbelievable. And we signed him after he joined us on a trial. Remember we used to do that? That was always interesting. He actually did start against the Berwick Rangers, played 60 minutes. But no, he didn't really pull up any trees for us. It was one of the gambles. I mean, we've done the trial signings before. I mean, Ivan De La Peña didn't sign after a trial, I remember. Rivaldo, we wanted to give Rivaldo a trial. That's right, aye. yes, folks, even back then in the 2000s, Celtic were mad when it came to transfers. Like, we tried to buy Sol Campbell as well.
He would fit in nowadays, all right.
Because he's, like, retired, no playing football.
I was going with the Tory angle, obviously.
Sorry, as if the Celtic board would be Tories, never. But that was just a failure of a signing. But so many Celtic have had.
Right, John, so we'll talk about the third game of the season against Rangers. We went back to Ibrox on the 6th of February 2011 in the Scottish Cup, and we drew 2 each. Reluctantly, I have to say, it was one of the best goals against us I've ever seen from a Rangers player. Jamie Ness opened the scoring, just no keeper that's getting that. It was just one of the ones you just have to hold your hands up and say, what a strike. It was ridiculous. And then I remember Chris Commons equalised as Aguirre cut inside, Ledley cut it back, and it was like Hooper and Commons were both going for the ball, but Commons went for it, put it past McGregor, and then that was a game where we went down to 10 men. I think Fraser Foster gets sent off for hauling down Naismith. Zaluska came on, and Zaluska did what he always does and doesn't save penalties. I think he's the worst record. Then Joe Hart, at least Joe Hart's actually saved 2 penalties. To my knowledge, Zaluska never once saved a penalty at Celtic, so Whittaker made it 2-1. Half time, you're resigning yourself to defeat. I mean, this is a decent Rangers side, as we know. Up against 10 men at Ibrox, you really couldn't see Celtic coming back from it. I think a lot of us at that game were just thinking, look, as long as it doesn't turn into a drubbing. Off the top of my head, the last time we went down to 10 men at Ibrox in a similar situation was the Martin O'Neill game in 2000, November. We went on to lose 5-1, unless you can think of any other examples. But I think that was just what I was going through in my mind as a fan, just don't get a tank in, take them again in a few weeks in the league. But John, something remarkable happened. Neil Lennon tactically outwitted Walter Smith, and Celtic, quite honestly, should have won that game.
Yeah, I mean, Walter Smith was a good manager for Rangers and especially Scotland. I mean, that was a poor Scotland team he took over, and he like got some great results. Obviously spent more money than any other manager, but he still was a good manager in his day. But Neil Lennon just got the better of him tactically. I mean, looking at this game and the game against Rangers a couple of weeks later that we'll talk about in a wee while, just brilliant tactics by Neil Lennon. I mean, they couldn't have coped being against 10 men. I said that team that really, if you're thinking about it logically, should have just been finished and we should have lost that game like 3 or 4-1. But the team were just solid, and Samaras especially. I know everybody talks about that Bruni goal and his subtle celebration against the other subtle guy, El Hadji Diouf. Two very subtle guys, Scott Brown and El Hadji Diouf. They weren't sort of guys that cause trouble and try and fight with people in that, no chance. Oh, that was just a great performance. I mean, I don't really want to talk about the Bruni because, well, it's been done to death. But it's more about how well we played. In Samaras especially, he actually didn't start that game, interestingly enough. It was Berham Kyle he came on for in the 62nd minute. And all I remember is that he just absolutely gave Weir and Bugera no chance at all. They just couldn't handle him. And it was really one of Celtic's best performances at Ibrox. This game and the 2-0 earlier, the month before, are two of Celtic's best performances at Ibrox, really, in the last 20 years, I'd say. I mean, it should be remembered as well that Stephen Naismith later got sent off in the game for a second yellow card for diving. Imagine the Hearts manager doing that. Never terrible. But it was just a brilliant performance, and it is just a pity that Neil Lennon never reached the heights tactically again with Celtic. I mean, okay, we did well the next season to win the league, and we were on that brilliant, like, unbeaten run. We did beat Barcelona, but that was probably more down to Fraser Foster playing one of the greatest games in Celtic history. But really, tactically, Lennon was never the same manager. And really, he isn't a very good manager anymore. I mean, he did well, of course, to win us the treble when he came back. Although we were like 8 or 9 points clear, so we were always going to win the league when he came in. But no, it's just a pity that really he's not a good manager anymore. And if he did like take a job again soon, I mean, he's been linked with clubs, I just don't think he'd do very good anymore. And really, I mean, everybody knows that we've not always been the biggest fans of Neil Lennon as a manager. But back then, it really looked like we'd got a really good manager on our hands. And like, it really was tactically excellent. And I don't know, I think that Inverness game, what we'll talk about in the next part of this series, really, I think, done a number on him. And I don't know if he's recovered for that. But no, it's just a pity that he never hit the heights again. Because at one stage, incredible enough as it sounds, he looked like he was going to be a really, really good manager. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I remember after that game, saying to myself, could Martin O'Neill, Gordon Strachan, Venglos, Janssen have done that? And the answer is probably no. It's definitely up there as one of his best achievements, John. I was so surprised when he got that result. Ledley, I remember, was fantastic. Izaguirre, outstanding. And the way that he utilised Mark Wilson and Izaguirre that game, like the two of them. Well, see the way Rangers are now, actually, where they're just like, they have an over-reliance on the wide men. Like Celtic did it that game where it was just like Wilson and Izaguirre totally dominated and took us right up the pitch, and Rangers were camped in with 11 men. For all that, Lennon has wound me up ever since. Not bitter enough to say that I don't respect what he did for us back then. That was a phenomenal result. Do you remember Walter Smith used to give Ali McCoist the cup games? It was McCoist that took the team for the cup.
Wink, wink. I really think Walter Smith probably took more charge. I mean, come on, look at how crap a manager Ali McCoist turned out to be. I know they always say that, but... And McCoist did interviews after the cup games, but I think that... I don't want Walter Smith just sat in the stands and was like, oh no, I'm not playing a part in this. Ali, you just do everything, I'll just sit there while we're getting beat, or while we're struggling to beat Celtic. No, I mean, I think Walter Smith did play a part in their games. I'm sure some liars that we know will tell us differently.
Thanks for that there, John. Look forward to hearing you on the Rangers review next week. There was the match in the league, and Celtic ran out 3-0 winners. John, I know that we have battered Rangers in recent years under Ange, and Brendan as well, but before then, that result against them at home was just pure and utter dominance. Gary Hooper scored two, and then Chris Commons added a third. That was a game, John, where it really could have been 6 or 7. Celtic were absolutely superb that day. The first goal by Hooper, where he took a phenomenal first touch, went past old man Davy Weir, and then it was a fantastic finish past Al McGregor. Second one, Samaras plays an inch-perfect pass to the on-rushing Izaguirre, puts across the ball, I think first time, or he might have took a touch, sent it across goal, and Gary Hooper, like, it's the quickest I've seen him, actually. He outpaced two defenders and he put it in at the back post, but the atmosphere was like rocking. I'm pretty sure that Sky cameras actually, there was footage of that with Celtic Park actually like bouncing because the fans were doing the huddle and we were singing Just Can't Get Enough and everything that season too. I think you'll have to look back on YouTube, but I'm very sure that there is footage of Celtic Park quite literally rocking. And it was just an amazing atmosphere. And you could say, John, after the, you know, after the crap with the Mowbray season and the 08-09 season under Strachan, where we just felt absolutely exhausted. This season in this game, you could really see that's when the atmosphere was back at Celtic Park again after like two dull seasons watching Celtic.
Well, there was no doubt Walter Smith was the manager in this game. And again, Lenny just beat him tactically. And we never hammered Walter Smith teams when he was Rangers manager, like first or second time. I mean, the games were usually close. It was an easy victory, so comfortable. And that Rangers team, as you say, David Weir, who Hooper just completely steamrolled for the first goal, they looked knackered and old and tired, that Rangers team. And everybody knew that was Walter Smith's last season as going to be Walter Smith's last season as manager. And I think he confirmed that no long after this game. So, I don't know, after that game, I thought, we're going to win this league. 8 points clear. And we'd played two games more than Rangers. They had two games in hand, obviously. And I thought, we're going to do this. We're going to win the league. Because we just looked unstoppable. Of course, it didn't turn out that way. But no, that was such a brilliant performance. One of our best performances at Celtic Park against Rangers. I'd say it's even better than like some of the hammerings, the Ange. Well, actually, no Ange. Because that was, when we beat Rangers 3-0 under Ange especially, that was sort of on a par with this game. When a Brendan Rodgers team hammered like Rangers, that was a rubbish Rangers team. But this was a good Rangers team that obviously wanted to win the league. And the fact that we beat them so easily just said a lot about this team and how quickly it all gelled together. And again, Neil Lennon looked like a great manager. But then, a week later, it all started going wrong. Right, Stevie?
Yes, I'd actually managed to wipe that from memory. So, thanks for that, John. But yes, for the purpose of this podcast, we do need to talk about that game at Fir Park, which probably was the turning point in that season, because Rangers, as you say, they looked done, they looked finished, and we let them back in it, as Celtic tend to do, John, with Rangers, historically. Yes, we went to Fir Park, and John Sutton scored after a couple of minutes, thanks to Charlie Mulgrew and Fraser Forster, both with one of the most calamitous mix-ups I've seen in some time. And then he scored a second half penalty. And in truth be told, Celtic just never turned up that game. From the team only a week earlier, they were up for it from the start against Rangers. You know, you had guys like Kyle Bartley getting wound up with Scott Brown. El Hadj Diouf retreated into the shell of the wind-up he was as well. In this game, John Sutton just bullied us and Motherwell were worthy winners. And that, sadly, let Rangers right back in. I think they'd maybe won the day before, an unconvincing win against St Mirren, and I remember looking on a forum, as I usually do, obsessed Celtic fan here, and the fans were just raging at the performance and saying Celtic were going to run over the top of Motherwell, but no, we didn't. It was a real disappointment, and again, it was just very much like the last one against Rangers, John, when we went to Ibrox and beat them, and then we drew a game at Hamilton when we really should have been winning it. North Lanarkshire, just, we didn't turn up there at all that season.
Your memory's playing tricks on you a wee bit, because Rangers beat St Johnson 4-0 that day. But here's an interesting bit. I'm just looking at the BBC website, the report on the game, and listen to this. This will shock you about a Neil Lennon side. Celtic winner Chris Commons thought that the players had underestimated Motherwell. I thought we were a little bit complacent. Celtic players under Neil Lennon underestimating another team? I just don't believe this. Surely the players wouldn't have went out and get drunk after the Rangers game or anything like that. I'm just suggesting that. I'm not saying that it happened, but surely that wouldn't have happened, right, Stevie?
No, it does not sound like a Neil Lennon Celtic team, John. Not at all.
No, I mean, as if they would underestimate a team. Lenny said that, actually, no, this is what Lenny said. This is unlike Lenny. No excuses, we were setting best, we were poor. There you go. Like, he usually used to blame referees all the time and all that, but no, we were absolutely rubbish that day. And then, of course, so that, of course, made the gap 5 points, with Rangers having two games in hand. And, of course, if they'd won them, they'd have went a point ahead. So, more in the title race to come in a wee while.
For the rest of the games up until the split, Celtic won every match. They won 5 out of 5, beating Hamilton 2-0, Hibs 3-1, which was a midweek game when I think Liam Miller scored a penalty against us too. St Mirren 1-0 was a really edgy game. Commons again scored like about 10 minutes to go. But a game against St Johnstone, now that was midweek. It was like a 6:05 kickoff on ESPN. John, remind the listeners on this one, what mental event occurred against St Johnstone in the 1-0 win late into the second half, and I've already tense game and an already tense season.
Yeah, but I think it was Michael Dewberry, ex of Chelsea, if my memory is right, was playing for St Johnstone, and he literally, like, practically picked the ball up in the penalty box. I'm no exaggerating, he practically picked the ball up, and the referee, who I don't remember who it was, let's just say a useless bloke, was like, he genuinely froze and didn't know what to do. Like, he was confused and they didn't get the penalty. He genuinely picked the ball up. Ian Brynes was the referee, that wonderful referee, and it was just absolutely bizarre that he didn't give the penalty. It was Benham Kyle that scored 45th minute. That this game was played at 6 o'clock because of the Champions League, and actually, as you see, a number of footballs came onto the pitch at the field of play to cause confusion as part of fans' protest at the 6 o'clock kickoff. I forgot about that. But Daryl Murphy actually started the game with Sam Arras up front. There you go. What a strange game. And actually, that game was the week before the Scottish Cup semi-finals, where St Johnstone actually played Motherwell won, and we played Aberdeen and won 4-0. And Aberdeen, the guys get sent off in that game as well, I think. But no, that was just an utterly ridiculous moment, even by the standards of bad decisions against Celtic. I think because, like, the highlights for this season are hard to come by, it was just genuinely, genuinely insane.
Yes, well, speaking of insane, John, the fourth game against Rangers, it really did have it all, and that is not a cliche, is it? In the Scottish Cup game on the 2nd of March, remember, of course, the first game ended in a 2-2 draw at Ibrox, Celtic down to 10 men. Rangers ended this game with 8 men. But okay, where do we start, John? We could be on this one for the next half hour, so let's try and condense this for the listeners as much as possible. Mark Wilson scores, Sasa Papach gets knocked out. Stephen Whittaker was sent off for the second bookable offence in the first half. Maji Bugera was sent off just before full time, and then Elhaj Diouf get a second caution as well. So yeah, Rangers were down to 8 men, but amazingly, that was not the most mind-blowing event of this game. John, I'll leave it over to you for what happened between two managers that ended up, quite honestly, changing Scottish football, one of the most bizarre things we've seen in this country.
Well, those two very calm individuals, Neil Lennon and Ali McAuliffe, who was quote-unquote in charge of Rangers that night, had a set two in the touchline where the pair of them ended up arguing with each other. I mean, it was no big deal. Nothing that you haven't seen before in a Celtic Rangers game. I mean, Celtic Rangers games have been intense before. But the good old Scottish government, who we would never criticise, reacted rather ridiculously to this moment and the fact that there was three red cards. Well, I mean, as if there's no been red cards at Celtic Rangers games before. But Alex Salmond, who, of course, isn't a bad guy at all, right? He decided to call a summit after this game to deal with the aftermath of really what was not that bad an incident. There's been a lot worse moments in football. But no, the reaction really was ridiculous. I mean, okay, there was three red cards, big deal. That's happened before in Celtic Rangers game. I think there's been games with four red cards. The managers had an argument, big deal. There's been arguments between football managers and Celtic Rangers games since time started. It was just ridiculous, and good old SNP, who would never criticise, really did drop the ball on that. I mean, imagine if the SNP had a huge vote about something very important just 3 years later. Imagine if that cost some votes, the ridiculous attitude towards football. Football fans especially, that would be really stupid at the end, wouldn't it, Stevie?
I do hate the fact that this is turning into a political show. I know we're losers, but we're not that bad, are we? As you say, it was a massive, massive overreaction. I've seen way worse in football around the world, and it's just one of these things that happens in the heat of the game. It's three red cards and two managers arguing, but yet the SNP then used that instant to create that offensive behaviour at Football and Threatening Communications Act. I mean, the amount of football fans that fucked over was ridiculous. It was got to the point that, you know, people's lives were being ruined, and this was all done just simply because politicians couldn't understand why people are passionate and maybe lose their rag sometimes at football. Fans do it, players do it, managers do it. You've seen people in the boardrooms and all that doing it, and yet they basically weaponised this. They brought out a pretty draconian act. And again, I'm keeping it very brief because we're only a political show and we never will be, thankfully. But it was massive overreaction, John. And you know, it ruined a lot of people's lives. But it doesn't matter if it's Celtic fans or fans of other teams in Scotland. A lot of people were fucked over just by that act because of what happened in that game.
Nothing happened in that game that has not been seen before at a Celtic Rangers game. I'm just glad that it wasn't any repercussions of that game. Like, there wasn't any incidents that happened like with fans' lives being ruined. Oh no, there was. Oh well, that's enough politics, as Ben Elton would say. Back to football, and another Celtic defeat to talk about. Oh good.
Yes, and that was on March the 20th, 2011. Something about that date that really sticks out to me, but I don't know what.
Was it by any chance your birthday, was it, Stephen?
I was, yeah, I turned 26 on that day. My granda got me a ticket for my birthday. What a guy, hero. Me, him and my uncle were all at Hampden. As Celtic, yes, dropped the ball yet again and handed the initiative and momentum all to Rangers when they lost 2-1 in the League Cup final.
And it was a game we deserved to lose, really, we just didn't turn up. Our favourite manager, Lenny, was barred from the dugout, and so he was sitting in the stands. And we were rubbish. I mean, I think Rangers scored first through Stephen Davis. We equalised not long later with a Joe Ledley header. But we just didn't dominate the game like we had. We dominated that cup tie. We dominated the 3-0 league game. And that 2-each cup game. But we just didn't really turn up. I mean, there was an incident in that game as well where I think it was Thomas Rogne fouled Jelavic in the box and the referee gave a penalty and then changed his mind. Can you believe that? A referee changed his mind and not giving Rangers a penalty in a cup final. Yes, a miracle can happen. But no, we just didn't play well at all that day. We didn't create that many chances. And all I remember about extra time is two things. One, Fraser Forster made one of the best saves I've ever seen for a Jelavic free kick that took a deflection and he had to twist his body and made just an amazing save on the top of the bar. And then the Rangers winning goal was sort of funny in a tragicomic way, if you want to briefly talk about that.
They took a quick free kick. I think it was a wee cretin, Vladimir Weiss. He sent Jelavic through, Mulgrew was sleeping. And then like it was like slow motion, it seemed to take like an age to go in. Izaguirre tried to stop the ball in the line and sort of bounced off the post and then bounced out and then the spin took it back into the goal when just Izaguirre couldn't get the ball out from under his feet and get it back into play. And yeah, I think he ended up falling into the net like David Marshall style against Czech Republic 2021 Euros. That was just, as you say, a game Celtic didn't turn up. I remember just everything about that being flat. A few things from that game, Izaguirre getting sent off was amazing because he just did a reset, didn't he? I think Weiss was going through to make it 3-1. And he just cleaned them out. I think he was sending Juve through. And I'm glad that Izaguirre get sent off and it only turned out to be 2-1 because had Juve scored to make it 3-1, I probably wouldn't have turned up to games for the rest of the season. That would have ended me. Hated him, but it was all part of the busy that season, wasn't it? I remember Fraser Forster for the first goal was shocking. He took an eternity to get down for that Davis goal. And the Hampden pitch itself, I don't know what it was. I'm not using this as an excuse. I'm not Lenny. You would have been at the game too. But the pitch was like rock hard. It just seemed as if it was like worn down. But I just remember that pitch, John, suited Rangers more than it did us. And it just seemed like rock hard and a terrible surface that day.
I don't remember the surface. I just remember that our defenders were ropey as anything. It was Rogne and Mulgrew. They just couldn't handle Jelavic, who, I don't know if people remember, he was a very good player for Rangers. One of the last signings they made, like big signings they made before they went bust. But no, I don't remember the pitch. I just didn't think we played well. Like Gary Hooper was quiet and Samaras, who had destroyed Rangers umpteen times that season, didn't do much. But no, it was a bad result because Rangers had already got that boost. We were floating at Motherwell. We sort of retook the lead mentally wise by beating them in the cup. But then we just gave them another huge boost. Oh, but it was more twists and turns because we were originally meant to play Inverness in March, but it got cancelled. Rangers played Dundee United at home on the same day and lost 3-2. David Goodwillie scored in the 90th minute, so the league table looked like, after 28 games, Celtic 67 points, Rangers 65, so we were batting advantage again. It was a very strange season, and we were miles ahead in goal difference as well. 9 goals ahead and 2 points ahead with 10 games to go. So if we just kept our nerve and won at least 9 of the last 10 games and avoided defeat at Rangers, because we had to play them obviously after the split, then we would win the league. watch this space to see what happens, listeners.
Yeah, I do remember that rescheduled game against Inverness, actually. But speaking of them, we did go up to Inverness in March after the quotation marks coming here, John. Shame game against Rangers that we won 1-0. Yeah, we went to Inverness. We were getting beat 1-0. And then Joe Ledley scored a double in midweek. Really impressive win. And then we went to Hampden again, where we played Aberdeen. We beat them 4-0. And we beat them 4-1. Chris Coleman's debut in the League Cup, where we scored 4 first-half goals. In this semi-final in the Scottish Cup at Hampden, we beat them again. Although it was 4 second-half goals. I don't really remember much of that, John. Although I think we did get a penalty. But I do remember it being a scorching day. I had a crap view at Hampden. Everything about it was rubbish. But Celtic did go through to a final. And yet here I am complaining.
Unlike you, I know. It was nothing each at half-time. We didn't miss a penalty. Constantine gets sent off for a last-man challenge. Stokes, apparently saved by that not very good goalie, Jamie Langfield. But we did end up winning easily. Mulgrew, Ledley, Commons and Maloney. And we were through to play Motherwell in the Scottish Cup final. First Scottish Cup final against Motherwell since, I think, something like the 1950s. We'd obviously played them in a famous, or rather infamous semi-final in 1991, but we somehow managed to lose 4-2. We beat them in a League Cup semi-final as well in 2006, I think. But no, we hadn't played them in a Scottish Cup final for a long, long time. And then we were set to play that team supported by such legends as Tam Cowan.
Before we go, we do have to address the further insanity of what happened before we played Kilmarnock for the last game before the split. But here's a wee bit of trivia to break things up for you, John. A wee quiz. What was the biggest song of 2011?
Oh, goodness. Can I get a clue?
Well, this isn't a clue. It's pretty much giving you the answer, but let's just say my laptop is her.
Your laptop is her? You'll need to tell me.
Adele.
Oh my God, that is terrible.
It was that Rolling in the Deep.
That's one of your better ones.
Right, okay, and I know you're not much of a gamer, and I am. 2011 in video games, do you know which was the biggest selling game of 2011.
Is it a Mario Brothers game or a Metal Gear Solid game?
No, it is not. It is a superhero game.
Arkham Asylum?
Batman Arkham City. What a game.
Alright, okay. I only remember Arkham Asylum, the first one.
Did you play that?
I used to play it in my mate Davey's house, who I used to go to games with. In this era, in fact. But no, in fact, he gave up his season ticket by then. But no, I used to play that in his eye. We used to watch the games.
We'll finish up by talking about a game in midweek where Celtic went to Kilmarnock. They won 4-0 on the pitch. Absolutely superb. Hooper and Commons were in outstanding form. It was the same night of the Copa del Rey final. Real Madrid beat Barca 1-0. Ronaldo scored. I think it was at the Mestalla because they had, like, it was a Mosquito at the time. The old Mosquito. And they had the Celtic game on one screen, the Copa del Rey on the other. And the crowd I was with, it was like mixed. So some were watching the Spanish game. Myself and others in the team for Sunday's birthday were watching the Celtic one, but I mean, on the pitch we were great, but it was overshadowed, John, with some quite ugly scenes just a day beforehand, actually.
Well, the story broke, I think, actually on the day of the game, the 20th of April, and well, it's hard to believe now looking back, but parcel bombs were sent to Neil Lennon, Paul McBride, who was Lennon's lawyer, and Trish Godman, who was the former deputy presiding officer of the Scottish Parliament. They actually got sent to Lennon at Lennox Town, and that was, it says here, on the Celtic Wiki on the 26th of March. Then the 28th of March to the Godman, the Labour MP, and then Paul McBride as well. And the Paul McBride one was addressed to a faculty of advocates in Edinburgh. So it was just crazy, really, that actually happened. And I don't know, thankfully there's been nothing like that since in Scottish football. And like the Scottish police, I'm reading an article about it, the Scottish police like asked for a voluntary news blackout when reporters like asked them to confirm it. It's just really unbelievable. I know we use words like unbelievable a lot in this great podcast, but that really was unbelievable. And thankfully nothing like that has happened since, and hopefully nothing like that happens again. And of course, just, I mean, a couple of days after this story came out, we of course were playing Rangers in the last game of the Old Firm World Series at Ibrox, in a game which a lot of people thought was going to decide the league. So it was a pretty crazy time, really. And thankfully, Scottish football seems to have left those days in the past. But no, it was just such a bizarre season, and that was just another example. And when we come to part three next week, it gets even more bizarre, but this time, thankfully, it's bizarre on the pitch.
This has been Gig Pod Rewind, part two, season 2010-2011 from a Celtic perspective. Rizzo, thanks for coming on. Cheers for reliving some of the mad memories that I thought we'd never have to talk about again. I will see you for the Motherwell game. We're going to do a review, aren't we?
We are, yes. So, thanks everybody for listening. You know what to get us by now. Remember, like and subscribe. Subscribe, as Tony Blair would say. On all the podcast platforms, Apple Podcast, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcast, subscribe. You can follow Stevie on Instagram at GigPod. Well, I'll put up one of my Rizzo picks the team type things on Saturday before we play Motherwell, and we'll be back with a review of the Motherwell game at the weekend, and a preview of the Lazio game before we do part three in this series next week. And then we'll have tons more podcasts between then and the January break. It's going to be football non-stop and Gig Pod non-stop. You lucky, lucky listeners. So, thanks to you for listening as we relieve some just mad memories of season 2010-2011. We'll be back with part three next week, but we'll be back as Celtic are back in league action this weekend with another podcast. Speak to you all soon. Thanks everybody for listening, and hail, hail.
Podcast Network.